You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Matt Wehmeyer with you for MLB.com Extras National League East as we head down the home stretch of spring training 2016. Opening day is just around the corner and an important time for many players who are still battling for roster or position spots on their various teams. And to that end, let's kick things off this week with Mets reporter Anthony DiComo.
Let's start off with the starting rotation, as is usually the case with this loaded Mets team. Another terrific outing for Jacob DeGrom on Monday as his outstanding spring continues. But there have been a few, I don't know if they're really concerns, but just whispers that he's not quite lighting up the radar gun like he did last season. He's been hovering between, I think, 91 and 94 at times. So I want to give you the floor right here to soothe the frayed nerves of these certain fans that are worried, oh, my God, it's, you know, this is a precursor of things to come, and he's not, his fastball's losing its life and what's going on. But, again, the floor is yours to tell Mets fans everything is going to be okay, and this is no reason whatsoever to be concerned, correct?
Well, you're asking the right person, because I really don't get concerned about any of that type of stuff in spring training. If you look at where Jacob DeGrom was at last spring, he's really not that far off from it. Look at Jurys Familia, for example. Last spring around this time was struggling to crack 93, 94 miles an hour, and we all saw what he was during the regular season. Guys, and certain guys specifically, don't necessarily concentrate on velocity this time of spring. Guys are working on various things, whether it's location, command of a certain pitch, even an extra pitch. So, you know, I always hate to say don't buy into it at all, because then if something happens, if it's an injury or it winds up being something a little more sinister than we think, you look stupid, right? But I really have a tough time buying into any of that stuff until we get to April. And if he goes out there in his first start and the velocity is not where it needs to be, then you can go ahead and panic. I'm just not a big statistics in March guy in general. I'm not a big radar gun in March guy in general. It's cool, like when you go out and you see Matt Harvey throwing 99 in spring training, you say, wow, he's midseason form, whatever it may be. But the opposite, I really don't buy into it too much. I don't worry about it, because history has shown that for most of these guys, even when they face these issues in spring training, April starts and it winds up being just fine.
Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes we kind of look for things to worry about, because especially at this stage of spring training, things get a little, I don't want to say mundane, but you're just in that weird phase or period where, okay, you know, most of the position battles are done and determined. Now you're waiting for the regular season, and you're just kind of biding your time now. And it's one of those cases, again, where you just kind of look for something, even if it's negative, to latch onto and to you know, be concerned about and to offer an opinion about. But even DeGrom himself said, correct me if I'm wrong, that after this particular outing on Monday, that he was very satisfied with his stuff, because he was getting a lot of swings and misses, not just on the fastball, but on his secondary pitches. And in the end, that's all that matters. If they're not hitting the thing, it doesn't matter how hard you throw it, right?
Yeah, and that's when Jacob DeGrom is at his best, is when he's commanding that secondary stuff. I mean, it's fun, again, like it's fun in the All-Star game when he goes out and throws nothing but fastballs and hits 98, 99, and we all say ooh and ah. But in the regular season, when you're facing lineups, when you're facing good hitters, that's not really how most guys go about their business and get people out. You know, even velocity during the regular season, you see so many guys will purposely take a little bit off just so that they have it in the tank when they need it. But you're absolutely right. I mean, with this team in particular, there were so few position battles, really no position battles of note coming to spring training. They were coming off a World Series appearance. Everything was really kind of hunky-dory. And with the exception of maybe a relatively minor, in the grand scheme of things, injury to his Drubal Cabrera, nothing has really changed that. So we do look for these little things to latch onto, and Jacob DeGrom's velocity in 1 4-inning spring training start happens to be the latest of those things. But again, if I'm a Mets fan, if I'm someone who's following this team, it's really not even on my radar right now as something that would worry me.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the biggest concern that you have as a Mets fan at this stage of spring training with your team having just come off a World Series appearance, I think life is pretty good. So
Life is pretty good, right?
Yeah, it really is for Mets fans, and with that lights-out rotation, the envy of the other 29 teams in baseball, in my opinion. So not much to worry about there. And, Anthony, to stick with the pitching this time on the bullpen end of things, on Sunday We saw Josh Edgen back on the mound for the first time since his Tommy John surgery a little over a year ago. And I think even for Mets fans, very easy to forget how good he was in 2014. 47 appearances, a 1.32 ERA. He was terrific. And, of course, he missed all of last season after the TJ surgery. Where do you think he could fit in within this Mets bullpen when he gets back to full health? How big of a contributor could he be?
Well, the Mets are flush with lefties all of a sudden with Jerry Blevins, the primary one, but you also have Antonio Bastardo, who's not necessarily a specialist, but he'll be down there at the end of games, and he does start with his left arm. Because of that, the Mets have this luxury of being able to bring Josh Edgen along at the pace that he needs to come along at. And what I mean by that is when he was having that great success with the Mets, he was pretty much the only guy they had from the left side. And it was a huge blow when they lost him to the extent that they went out last spring and made the trades for Blevins, who ultimately re-signed with the team, got hurt, missed all of last season, but ultimately re-signed in the offseason. And for Alex Torres, who also wasn't really a lefty specialist and struggled, but they were looking for answers at that time. Well, they're not looking for answers anymore from the left side. So if Josh Edgen struggles or has setbacks in his road back from Tommy John surgery, they don't need to rush him. They won't rush him. Quite the opposite. To the contrary, I would say Josh Edgen has to prove that he's back at that level before he's going to be given a spot on this roster. I don't think anything's going to be handed to this guy. I don't think just because he's healthy, he's going to be on the team. I think the Mets want to see that he's back in that form, that he's back in the, what he was essentially 2 years ago when he was getting left-handers out very well, when he's even getting right-handers out to a certain extent. He has to show the Mets that he's that guy. I don't think it'll be before May. It could be later in the summer than that. So it's certainly a guy to watch, a guy to keep an eye on, and a guy that, when all is said and done, might wind up being a very big, very important part of this bullpen. But again, he's going to have to prove it to the Mets. He's going to have to show that he's ready. And if and when he does that, it'll be a nice addition for a Mets team that has gone a long time without having one reliable left-handed pitcher. Now they have the potential to have two, three, even four.
It's funny what a difference a few months makes, right? And again, if it's unfair to expect a guy to come in and contribute as he did in 2014 with the 1.32 ERA, but if he's anything even close to that when he gets back to full health, like you said, what an addition he could be to that Mets bullpen, who all of a sudden has lefty arms to choose from after it was such a sore spot the last year. Going to the position player aspect of it now, looking at how the Mets are shaking out here in spring training, it seems, Anthony, with almost every team in March, there's a player who breaks out with a huge spring training. It's kind of off the radar. You don't see it coming, and perhaps creates a battle for a roster spot or a position spot where one did not exist heading into spring training. I think for the Mets, that player right now has got to be Alejandro Deaza. Is there any chance that he enhances his projected status, like I said, at the beginning of spring training as merely a backup outfielder? Could he play a bigger role on this team and force somebody to the bench perhaps?
Well, I don't think he's going to go that far, but when we first got to spring training, Sandy Alderson was pretty explicit in saying, look, there's no real position battles this camp, but there are playing time battles. And to me, the most intriguing one was backup outfield, because the Mets signed Alejandro Deaza long before they thought Yoenis Cespedes was a realistic option to play for them, was a realistic option to return. And it kind of left him as a man without a job when Cespedes came back to town. And I personally came to camp thinking there was no way the Mets were going to keep this guy. I thought they were going to trade Deaza. Well, circumstances have changed a bit. Ruben Tejada is gone, which sort of, it almost seemed that for a time that they were going to trade one or the other. Well, they wound up trading neither, but Ruben Tejada is gone as a free agent after the Mets released him. So I do think Deaza is going to stay now, and it's just a matter of how much playing time can he get. The Mets love Juan Lagares still. Juan Lagares has come into camp in great shape. He's having a pretty nice spring himself. So it's going to be hard for Deaza, even with the spring that he's having, to cut into that playing time. Lagares also has the benefit of being the one real plus-plus defender they have out there. But the Mets do need that bat off the bench, and Deaza has proven that he can be that guy. So even if he's nothing more than that, just a veteran, proven pinch hitter off the bench, I think he's going to see his at-bats that way, and he could potentially be a big part of that team that way. I don't think it's going to be more than that. because the Mets love their starting outfield. They love Conforto out there in left. They certainly love Cespedes in center, and Granderson was probably their most valuable player last year. Now, that being said, there are going to be times when Conforto sits, when Granderson sits, there will be some extra playing time to go around. I think Lagares is going to wind up taking the bulk of it, but that doesn't mean that Diaz doesn't have a role in this team.
Bill, we thank you for the time, and Bill, let's start off with some congratulatory news for national starter Gio Gonzalez. Not for anything he's done on the mound this spring, but he became a father to a baby boy, Enzo, back on Thursday. Congrats to he and the wife. And I think it's rather understandable, Bill, that he was not all that sharp during his Monday start, first two innings on the mound. And the discussions you've had with the new dad, how's he handling all the chaos right now?
He's handling it well. You know, yes, he didn't pitch well, but this is one happy guy. He's happy to have a son, and I think he'll settle down, and he's going to pitch the second game of the regular season, so he has to be ready. And the key with him, he has to cut down the walks. He has to throw less pitches. I mean, his games can take a long time. He can really get a lot of full counts, so that has to change this year. And hopefully, by the time they play the Braves, you know, in April, it can change.
And hopefully he gets some sleep between now and opening day in his first few starts of the year. And, Bill, this is something I brought up in previous podcasts with other writers, but regarding Clayton Kershaw last year, he, too, he and his wife had a baby boy, a baby girl, actually, just before the season began. And Kershaw was not quite Kershaw for that first month, month and a half, and I think that had a lot to do with it. Do you see this in some cases with some of the guys on the team where they become dads for the first time, or maybe even not the first time, that it just kind of throws off their rhythm because of that huge responsibility on their shoulders now?
No, man, no way. I think all you have to look at is Steven Strasburg. When he had his kid, I mean, I thought the guy became a much better pitcher. So I don't think, you know, having a kid, the birth of a kid, you know, makes a difference. I just think that, I think in this case, Gio will be ready to go, and I don't think it will matter. It's just a matter of making sure that he throws strikes. This is not something that's new. This is old, and hopefully he can get it together this year.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, there's no doubt he's a happy guy right now. He's on cloud nine, and we'll see what kind of a contribution he makes for the Nationals in 2016. Bill, remaining in the pitching staff, it's been an interesting couple of days for Bronson Arroyo, who thought that he had one injury, and then it turned out not to be the case, and it's slightly better than what was initially projected. Just kind of take us through this timeline and give us an update on where things are at regarding this mystery regarding Bronson Arroyo.
Well, at first he thought he had an 80% tear in his rotator cuff, and he thought he was done. But after he found out a couple of days later that he had rotator cuff tendon tears, I think he's going to try to give it a shot. And, you know, he's going to rehab, and the Nationals are not going to release him. Even though he has a minor league contract, he's going to stay with the team. And, you know, hopefully he can be back by May or June. So Dusty Baker really believes in him and believes that he can really help this rotation out. So, you know, I got to believe in him. He knows him. He played with, you know, he worked for him for 6 years. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and this is a guy that's been remarkably durable during his entire big league career as he's in his late 30s now. I don't think he'd ever had a DL stint prior to some mishaps here in the last couple of years. But if he can get his act together health-wise, as you said, Bill, he could be quite a contributor for this Nationals rotation moving forward. Bill, let's shift gears now to the lineup. And some guy named Harper, I hear he's pretty good. Back on Sunday, Bryce Harper, of course, launching his first two homers of the spring, and they both came off Justin Verlander, no less, who is experiencing something of a career renaissance of his own after a couple of down years. Now, this might sound absurd for a guy who was so obscenely talented in Bryce Harper, but do you think he felt even the slightest sense of relief when he finally put one over the wall for the first time this spring, given that it had been a couple of weeks and he still had the goose egg in that column?
No, because it's spring training. If it was the regular season, I think he would be worried. But now, no way. I mean, it's too early, and you know he's going to get it together. I mean, he's their best hitter by far. And one thing I can tell you that Bryce Harper is so confident, he's not worried about getting to a long, a long slump in terms of hitting home runs. He's not worried at all.
And, I want to get your feedback on Harper because, in many people's opinions, and justifiably so, the best baseball player on planet Earth. And now, having said that, he's still just 23, which is amazing. So, given all that, do you feel he's in a position right now to be looked upon as a true team leader, a clubhouse leader, even though he is still amazingly the second youngest player on the major league roster despite entering his fifth big league season? How do you assess the role he plays in that clubhouse right now?
I think he's one of the leaders. I don't think he's the leader. I think it still comes down to Jason Worth and Ryan Zimmerman. I think in a couple of years, yes, no question, he will be the leader of the staff. He's definitely the leader on the field in terms of the offense and everything. But as far as that clubhouse goes, it's still Jason Worth and Ryan Zimmerman. You have some time before you see Harper leading a team that way.
And we mentioned that Harper is the second youngest guy on the team. The guy that has the distinction of being the youngest is Trey Turner. Not too far ahead of him on the age chart is Michael Taylor. They're playing for a manager in Dusty Baker, of course, he's had this track record, he's had this label all these years as being a guy that prefers the veterans over the kids, so to speak. So given the high ceilings for Turner and Taylor and the things that they could contribute to this team and who they're playing for, what kind of a role do you see for each of those young men here in 2016?
Well, before I even answer that question, I have to tell you that Dusty Baker gave Joey Votto his first chance. So I can't say that he doesn't give veterans, a chance. So in terms of Trey Turner, I think he should be the starting shortstop, to be honest with you. And because of his speed, I think defensively he's pretty good. I think he'll get it together offensively. I think, to me, it's a no-brainer, but I think right now it's going to be Espinosa being the shortstop and Michael Taylor. He's having a great, great spring. I think he's going to be the fourth outfielder when it's all said and done. I know a lot of people would prefer if he played over Jason Worth, but I'm telling you right now, that's not happening. So I see him as the fourth outfielder, maybe getting a start here and there to rest Worth and even Ben Revere, and that's about it.
And as far as Dusty Baker, the hiring of him, much ballyhooed earlier this offseason, the guy is a three-time NL Manager of the Year. His track record speaks for itself. We often see, even with the most experienced, talented guys in the managerial department, sometimes it takes a little while, maybe even a full season, to get fully acclimated to a new environment, a new team, and new players. Having said all that, how do you feel the fit has been thus far between Dusty Baker, after a couple of years off, and managing this ball club, which just has talent coming out of its pores?
So far, it's been great. It seems like the team seems more relaxed. They seem to be trying harder for Dusty Baker. I mean, Dusty Baker's giving everyone a chance to try to make this team. And, it seems like Dusty Baker has been honest with them, straightforward. I think he's been great so far. And what I like more that I didn't take in starting spring training is that it seemed like they're more aggressive on the bases. I mean, they have a lot of stolen bases so far. I know it's just spring training, but it seems like with Davey Lopes there and Dusty Baker there, that they're going to be stealing a lot more bases. So I'm expecting Bryce Harper to be a 30-30 guy. I'm expecting Michael Taylor to steal a lot of bases off the bench. I mean, Ben Revere, I mean, he's going to be even better. So I didn't take that into account before it started, but I am now. It's going to be really exciting to see.
This is Bill Latson of MLB.com. I'm here with Jason Worth. Jason, thank you so much for being with me. Jason, you're my 2016 Comeback Player of the Year for this year. I'm just wondering, how do you feel about your season coming up?
Well, I feel good. I mean, if you're the comeback player, that means things didn't go so well for you the year before. So, that's kind of where we're at. I know coming into the season, last year was a disappointment on many levels. But personally, I just really, was kind of stuck behind the eight ball all year. And right when I started feeling good, I get hit in the wrist and break my wrist again. So, it's like the third or fourth time I broke my wrist in my career. It could be Sometimes injuries can be discouraging, you know, but I feel really good. My wrist feels strong. I feel like that's, you know, in the distant past, and I'm ready to get back to playing the type of ball that I've always played, so I feel good.
How do you feel on the field? It's good to have you back in spring training.
Yeah, you know, this feels like a normal spring training. I'm getting my work in. I just need at bats and need to play. You know, I think we got like 2 weeks or something like that still, so that should be about right. I never really hit a whole lot in the off season or run a whole lot because, you know, it's tough when you live upstate and it's snowing. So getting down here, it's time. We got like 2 weeks, and it's time to, you know, start kicking in gear and get ready for the season.
You have a new manager now. Tell me what you think about Dusty Baker.
I like Dusty a lot. I mean, I've always admired and respected him from across the diamond and playing against him for years. And I've had some guys that are teammates and friends that have played for him and speak really highly of him. And so far as advertised, you know, he keeps it light. He's got, you know, a positive vibe to him. The clubhouse has got a good vibe to it. And so far spring training has been great. But it's going to be good to go through the season with him, you know, and get to know him on that level. So I'm looking forward to it.
You have your mentor back, Davey Lopes. How good is it to have him back?
You know, really good. I hit that homer the other day. I slapped five of them at the first base. That was the first time in a long time that I've given anybody a high five at first base. Spent all that time with Davey in Philly and learning from him and getting to know him. Obviously, you know, he was a great player, and to have him as a coach for as long as I had him in my career, you know, I think I feel blessed, really, just to be around him in his presence and to learn from him. So I'm excited. I'm really excited for the other guys too. I mean, just to get to experience it, you know, go through your career and not to experience Davey Lopes at least once in a season is like a crime. So I'm happy for my teammates and I think he's going to help, you know, the young guys like Mikey Taylor and Bryce and, you know, even, you know, Ben Revere's had him in Philly, so he knows. But he's going to do nothing but up these guys' games.
I got to ask you this, Jason. How far can this team go? I mean, a lot of expectations were expected last year. This year, not too much, but can this team go all the way?
I just think we got to stay healthy. You know, I mean, there was so much last year with the, you know, the team we were supposed to be, and you know, we didn't stay healthy. That was bottom line. So if we stay healthy, I think we can win some games. And then if you find yourself playing in October, all bets are off. You know, anybody can win. Any team that makes it in October, as you've seen the past few years, you know, wild cards that have won. It doesn't matter. You just got to get there. So hopefully we can find ourselves playing games, meaningful games in October, and let the chips fall where they may.
Jason, final question. People don't know this, but a lot of people don't realize that you come from a great sports family. Your grandfather, uncle were in baseball. Your mother was a track star. I mean, what did you learn the most from them?
My stepdad played 3 years in the big leagues also. I don't know. It was just a way of life, I guess. You know, growing up, I was talking to Mike Rizzo today about my uncle, but, you know, he roomed with him in the minor leagues somewhere along the way, and I was saying how I was the only California Angels fan in Central Illinois at the time, you know, like, so, you know, you see the game from a different perspective, maybe, you know, some people along the way always said that I got treated differently because of who my family was, but I mean, I put in a lot of hard work as a kid. Like, I felt like I worked 10 times harder than everybody else. So I think if anything, I think I learned that from my mother, who was adamant about hard work. You know, she preached it over and over. And so I think my work ethic was one thing that really set me apart.
Jill, thank you for joining us. And I think as good a place of any to start would have to be Jose Fernandez. He was nearly perfect on Tuesday against the Red Sox, five hitless innings, 60 pitches, 41 for strikes. The only blemish on his ledger, a two-out walk in the first inning. He was simply sensational. Now, given his recent history, meaning the Tommy John surgery, is he perhaps a little more motivated than your average pitcher to use spring training as kind of a platform to prove himself, to prove to himself and to others that he really is 100% all the way back from the TJ surgery?
Matt, I think it's just more of that's Jose Fernandez. He's as fierce a competitor as anyone has ever covered. He's a guy who treats spring training starts like their Game 7 of World Series starts. He's motivated. He's facing, you know, minor league hitters on the backfield working on things or, you know, facing the Red Sox. So, but the bottom line is he was really good, you know, and good out of the stretch, good out of the windup. I think he touched 98. Changeup is a pitch that could be a bigger weapon for him this year. And, you know, still kind of, you know, learning to pitch a little bit more off his fastball, meaning not necessarily have to ramp up 98, kind of pitch at 94, 95, 93 if need be, changing speeds and just kind of developing into a rounded pitcher. And that was a really impressive show and a legitimate win. You know, in spring training, you go two innings and your team's in head and you get a win. He went five innings and he got a win. You know, so it kind of even felt a little bit like a regular baseball game.
And, Joe, in terms of his arsenal and his stuff, which, of course, you know, before the surgery, when he first burst onto the scene and won the Rookie of the Year, even then it was lights out. But when you compare that Jose Fernandez to the Jose Fernandez we're seeing now post-surgery, do you notice an uptick in velocity or sharper breaking stuff? What kind of subtle differences do you see with him?
He might be throwing a little harder now. I don't know if he's any better, though. He was. You know, obviously, you'd rather not have major reconstructive surgery. He was pretty special as a rookie, you know, but he had a way of, if you kind of look at his splits and his breakdown of how he uses his pitches, you know, he'd throw in the upper 90s, but also throw about, you know, like 50, 51, 52% fastballs and then throw a high percentage of curveballs and sliders. And, you know, I remember I think it was a 13 strikeout game against the Pirates, and he threw like every strikeout pitch was a slider. You know, here he's trying to, you know, relieve the stress on that elbow, and that's why the changeup is going to be a big weapon for him because it's the same arm action as the fastball. And I just think he's trying to, you know, he still has the nasty slider, the really good breaking ball, and just giving the hitter something else to think about. And quite frankly, his fastball is good enough to get you out, so why try to trick hitter sometimes when he doesn't need to? So I think there's a little more of a plan. He's 23 now. It's hard to believe he's still that young and has been in the league. This is, what, his third, fourth year in the big leagues. And he, you know, he's probably, like I said, a little more polished, mature pitcher now rather than just this electric, great stuff. Here he's coming at you, try to hit me kind of guy.
Yeah, like you said, the fact that he's only still 23 and, you know, technically has not even come close to reaching his prime, a frightening thought for the rest of baseball, but a very comforting thought for the Miami Marlins, no question about that. And Joe, of course, days before his great start on Tuesday with the five hitless innings, the club announced that Wei-Yin Chen, not Jose Fernandez, is going to be given the opening day start. That certainly raised a few eyebrows, but there is a method to the madness, if you will. Kind of explain the club's strategy behind this move.
Well, if people listened to the podcast last week, they would have got the inside, you know, tip that this was certainly possible and that Chen was lined up to go one and Jose two. And as people know, he's on an innings range right now of about 180, and the club is, you know, trying to best figure out how to reach that number and get maybe a little above it. And, you know, spacing him out more, it kind of lines him up about half of his starts to be closer to two off days. And so I think they want him as much as possible pitching every sixth day compared to every fifth. And, you know, that was one way of doing it. And Chen, you know, is there was their prize offseason pickup. They got from the Orioles, and exciting day for him because I think he's the second Taiwanese-born pitcher to start an opening day. Chin Ming Wong and the Yankees, I believe it was 2008, was an opening day starter. So exciting time for Chen and, you know, and his country to celebrate this. But as obviously Jose is the ace of the staff, he's just going to happen to go in the second game.
Now, of course, you know, those are two very big presences at the top of that rotation, meaning Jose Fernandez and Wei-Yin Chen, and, you know, very easy for them to overshadow the other three guys in that rotation, but there are three other guys in this rotation who should not be overlooked. Talk about them. I don't know if it's set in stone just yet on who the 3, 4, and 5 are going to be, but at least give us a kind of a heads up on who was leading that race to fill out that rotation.
Yeah, they haven't officially announced the 3 through 5, and the way things happen in spring training, as soon as you kind of do, things change, something bizarre happens. But, you know, the rotation pretty much is set in terms of the five who will be. I mean, the fact that Justin Nicolino just got sent down, took him out of the mix for a rotation spot. Adam Connolly has been really, really good, and he's going to start the year in rotation. And Jerry Cozart kind of cemented himself in there as well. Many expected that was going to happen. There was, if he wasn't going to be in, Cozart would have been more of a, you know, he dealt with a lot of injuries last year, mostly kind of with he had the vertigo and the inner ear infection that kind of affected his balance on the mound. And, you know, his stability has been really good. He's thrown the ball very well. And Tom Kohler will be in that rotation. How they split them up, whether it's Kohler 3, Connolly 4, and Cozart 5, or any, you know, shifting around of that remains to be seen. But it looks like, barring something very unusual, that's what the rotation is going
to
be.
A few issues to tie together to see who the Braves are going to send out there, their 25-man roster for opening day. Let's begin with a guy that we do know is going to be on the roster, certainly, and he has a solid spot in the rotation. That is Matt Whistler. Solid performance on Thursday night. Went 3 1/3 against the Phillies before the heavens opened up and the game was rained out. But nonetheless, he's had a very solid spring, Mark, and I believe the ERA a shade under 3 now. Where does he slot into this Braves rotation right now? Upper half, lower half, or where do you think?
Well, you know, he's going to probably slot right there in that number 2, number 3 spot. You know, my guess is he'll start the third game of the season. And you know, one thing that stood out in this camp, there's been, you know, a lot of encouraging signs. One thing that I think I will carry away from here is just how much Whistler and Mike Foltynewicz have grown over the course of the year. You know, at the beginning of last year, these guys are the club's top 2 pitching prospects. They both obviously went through some growing pains once they reached the major league level last year. They're still, you know, they're still not completely polished products. I'm not trying to say, I'm just, as this club looks forward to the future with the Newcombs and the Terrell Jenkins, Aaron Blair, you know, as they watch these guys this year, just remember that they're probably going to go through some of the same growing pains that these guys did. But what we're seeing is how much progress that Foltynewicz and Whistler have made this year. With Whistler, it has been you still see a guy that probably projects to be a number 3 or a number 4 and a really good rotation. Maybe that's his ceiling, but he has the potential to you know, be a consistent, provide you consistency throughout the regular season. And one benefit he will have this year is the addition of a changeup that he worked with Tom Glavine this offseason. To just basically, they worked on mindset, just confidence, and really focusing on location, keeping the changeup down. There's some mechanical changes, but more, Whistler says, is it was more of a mental thing with Glavine. So if you're going to learn to change up from somebody, if what Glavine says registers in your head, then you're probably going to benefit from it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can pick the brain of a Hall of Famer, you know, more power to you. And that's a huge, huge advantage for Matt Whistler, certainly. And, Mark, to elaborate on that point a little more, you know, you never want to see any player struggle, especially a young player who's trying to break into the big leagues and they've got all this potential and, you know, all this promise. And again, they hit some bumps in the road, they hit some obstacles. And again, you never want to see that. But is that, when you look at that in terms of a big picture, can that almost benefit a young pitcher to see that, okay, you know what, you've cruised through your entire baseball life up till now. Here's some adversity. How you got to handle it? And then, you know, that can make you stronger in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly can be used as a benefit if you take the experience and make the most out of it. And as you said, instead of allowing it to get you down, you know, you take it as a valuable learning experience and move on. Look, there's no exact science, and it's not but at the same time, you look back at the way that the Smoltz and Glavine start their career, and it, to some extent Maddox there in the early years of the Cubs, it certainly the path did project to go where each of their careers took them. But at the same time, you know, it's all on how you consume what you experienced during those early years. And you know, young guys like Whistler and Foltynewicz, they seem to be capable of benefiting from those struggles last year.
Yeah, and sky's the limit for both those guys. And that leads right into our next point about Foltynewicz. You wrote in a recent article that he seems to have the inside track on that number five spot. It seems like his main competition is Manny Bonuelos and Williams Perez. Discuss why you think, you know, beyond the numbers, why you think he's got the inside track on that. And supposing that Foltynewicz does get that spot, what then becomes of Bonuelos and Perez? Are we talking bullpen roles or perhaps down to AAA for a little bit?
Well, the same with Bonuelos. I think even since I wrote that, you know, I think it's pretty much he's probably out of the mix now. You know, it looks like he could definitely benefit from some more time at AAA. I think that, you know, the one thing with Manny is you hope that he can stay healthy. The elbow is always going to be a concern. So I think that, you know, the hope with Manny is that he can go to AAA and pitch effectively and stay healthy this year. With Foltynewicz, you know, he fits in that fifth spot, but at the same time, he's been as impressive as any pitcher during the small sample size we've seen from him here. As any pitcher we've seen down here thus far, and that's primarily because his ceiling is higher than any other pitcher in that rotation. That includes Turan. I mean, Julio Turan is probably a number three, number four type of guy as well. He just happens to be the number one guy on this staff. But Mike Foltynewicz has the stuff where you know whether he can ever reach that ceiling or not. You do see that he has the potential to be that one, number one or number two in the rotation.
And, Mark, when we shift now to the bullpen, why don't you get your feedback on this? Because in my eyes, it's a pretty intriguing battle. So the closer spot, you've got, you know, Jason Grilly, the veteran. He's seems to be close to full health after suffering that nasty ruptured Achilles tendon last year. But that said, he is 39. Then you've got, on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, Aroldis Vizcaino, a young guy who was tremendous last year in 36 appearances, including 9 saves. Which way do you think the team is leaning here, especially considering that, you know, it's no secret the Braves, they're in rebuilding mode. They're young. They want to stay young. And would it benefit them more to go with the younger guy as opposed to Grilly? What do you think they're thinking here?
Well, there's two ways of thinking that, you know, with the rebuilding. I do think that this guy, you know, has certainly proven that he's worthy of consideration for the closer's role. And I do think, you know, given the choice, yeah, that's where Freddy Gonzalez has said he may use both in that role, but I do think that more often than not, he would probably lean towards this guy, you know, especially right now as we stand here in late March, based on what we've seen from the two guys. If, you know, the other part of that equation is, yes, it's nice to get that young guy experience. You'll have, you know, some financial guys that will look at it and go, okay, well, do you really want to give the guy give this guy, you know, the saves that are going to affect the amount of money he's going to get in arbitration. I think that's digging a little bit too deep. I don't think that's the Braves' mindset, but I just kind of wanted to point that out is one thing that some of the fans have said is, hey, look, you know, why are you going to give this guy, you know, these saves? That's going to jack up his costs.